Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is brought to you today in part by Audible, offering anytime, anywhere listening of your favorite audiobooks with the biggest selection ever, and it's all backed by Amazon. I just finished listening to The First Rule of Punk by Celia C. Perez, and I absolutely loved this story of Malou navigating her way around moving halfway across the country, starting at a new school, and finding her own place in the world, even if it's not what Super Mexican, her affectionate name for her mom, thinks is best. The story is brimming over with heart and passion for punk rock, DIY, and stand up and say it out loud conviction. Perfect for any middle grade reader and an easy way to make that long weekend drive pass by in no time. Audible is offering a 1 month free trial to listeners of this podcast. Visit the show notes for this episode at allthewonders.com to start your free trial and support this podcast with the same click of a mouse or tap of a screen. Meet Duncan Tonatio. Listen to the dance and feel the heartbeat of Mexico. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 397 of the podcast with Duncan Tonatio. Duncan's newest work as both author and illustrator is a picture book entitled Danza, Amalia Hernandez and Mexico's Folkloric Ballet. I marveled at how Duncan brought movement and form to the table in his iconic art style. But even more so, I was moved to learn about Ami and her influential life work, bringing something never before seen to the world's stage, and in doing so, imprinting Mexico's history and people onto the hearts and memories of the hundreds of thousands reached through Mexico's folkloric ballet. Duncan's energy and passion for the topic was infectious, and I hope you'll visit the show notes for this podcast episode so that you can see an excerpt of Ballet Folklorica de Mexico and the beautiful art Duncan created to honor the source material. Here's episode number 397 of the podcast with Duncan Tonatio. Welcome to the podcast, Duncan Tonatio. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
I feel confident that many, many people listening, both children and librarians and teachers and artists themselves, know you and know your work. I feel like your style is iconic. But for those that don't know you yet, would you mind introducing yourself to the people listening?
Well, my name is Duncan, or Duncan Tonatiu. In Spanish, you can pronounce my name Duncan. And I write and I illustrate books for children. I have written and illustrated 7 books, and I have 2 books that other people wrote that have illustrated. Some of my titles are Separate Never Equal, Pancho Rara and the Coyote, Dear Primo, Diego Rivera, his Golden Hours. Yeah, so that's a little bit about myself.
Oh, and you have this beautiful new book. I was going to say, I was going to jump into Funny Bones and how my art teacher and I became obsessed with that book last year. But I digress. There's so many great books that you've done to talk about. But tonight, I'm so excited that we get to talk about Danza and we get to talk about Amalia Hernandez. Would you mind introducing this story to those listening? And then I have so much I want to jump in and talk to you about with where the inspiration to lift up Ami's work comes from and everything else. But how are you describing this book to others?
Well, Danza is a picture book. It's nonfiction. It's the story of Amalia Hernandez, who founded Mexico's folkloric ballet, which is a dance company that continues to perform today. It's very successful. It has performed uninterruptedly for more than 50 years. And so the book is about how she came to found the ballet and how she became interested in the folkloric dances of Mexico and then trying to bring that to the world stage.
So you make a note in the story that these are that for the work that Ami has done, she's influenced many, many dancers and choreographers and people that put on performances. And you make this wonderful note that says, perhaps you've seen a performance yourself. I know I have. And so I thought I would start there with when you first saw a folkloric dance, and how perhaps that from your childhood led into telling Ami's story on this book.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so I grew up in Mexico, and in Mexico, it's very common to perform a folklore dance for, like, I remember dressing like a charro and dancing the jarabe tapatío, the sort of the Mexican hat dance, as some people call it, on Mother's Day or at the end of the school year. It's just something that's very common, or maybe around some holidays, like Cinco de Mayo or 16 de Septiembre, which is the Mexican Independence Day. And so it's just very much a part of the culture. Then as a teenager, I came to the US and I went to a high school in Massachusetts and later on to design school, to art school in New York City. And on different holidays that are meaningful for Mexican American people, there would always be folklore dance on the street or on some festival happening, because I think it's a way for people to people in the U.S. to it's important in Mexico, but it's also important in the U.S. because it's a way for people to display their heritage, to show that they're proud of it, to celebrate it. So those were some of the reasons why I wanted to make the book and sort of a connection to folklore dance.
Yes, did you know about Amalia from the time you were young? Was that a name that you were familiar with? I mean, certainly her work and her influence were something, but how much did you know about her life before choosing to write a story about her?
So I didn't know that much. I wasn't that familiar with it. But what happened is my wife is a dancer. She's classically trained. She studied at Alvin Ailey, and she does more like contemporary and modern. And she's been doing a lot of aerial in the last couple years. So I enjoy dance, and I have done some drawings and different things related to dance, just personal projects related to illustrations and drawings of dance. But then my wife's mother and her mother, my wife's grandmother, were also dancers, and my wife's mother was actually part of the folkloric ballet in the 70s, I believe. She performed. And so that was a sort of a more direct connection, and sort of just talking with her, I thought that's sort of when I started getting the idea of doing a book about Amalia Hernandez. I had actually seen her ballet perform some years ago at a festival, but that's more or less when I heard my mother-in-law talk about it, that I thought it'd be interesting to do something about Amalia for the public at large.
I was really taken back learning about her life. I knew her name, but I did not know what great influence she had. I mean, it was beyond anything that I had known before, to see that this woman grew up loving dance and was so passionate about it that her father, she even cracked her father into supporting her. But from there, she saw and absorbed her people, the cultures around her, the history of her country, and found ways to bring that into the choreography of the dances that she was setting on stage, and then more so to bring all of these pieces together to really tell the story of Mexico. And I thought how incredibly influential and important and perhaps even daunting a task to take on, and yet she did it so beautifully and continues to have that influence. I just thought that was such a significant and magnificent thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's also, I think it was like there were a lot of other expressions of that nationalism, if you will, in Mexico at the time. You know, it's also the time of the great muralist of Rivera. There was a composer, like I think his name is Silvestre Revueltas, if I'm not getting that wrong. But it was a time after, like, it was after the Mexican Revolution, where sort of Mexico was trying to sort of figure out who it was, and also just kind of being proud of who it was as a country. And so I think there was a lot of support. She received a lot of support from the government. And I think there was just a lot of interest from different intellectuals and different people to just celebrate the culture and the roots of Mexico in different ways. So I think, I mean, she was, you know, had an incredible work ethic, but I think the conditions of the time and it also really help it be so successful.
Yeah. You know, I see that same love and nationalism, if you will, for Mexico in your work, in the way that you bring these stories, not just to children that may be familiar with some of this history, but also to people that are brand new and learning and appreciating that culture. When you said you moved in when you were in high school, correct, to Massachusetts?
Mm-hmm.
And along that way, at some point, you found your way into illustration and more importantly, into children's books. I'd love to know, Duncan, what was the draw for you to tell these stories to children?
I've been interested in doing art and writing and drawing since I was young. Since I was a kid, I sort of always had an artistic inclination and wanted to do something in the arts. And as I went to a very arts oriented high school. Later on, I went to, you know, an art school for college, and I was also doing a lot of writing. So it was definitely something I wanted to pursue, and I was always pretty, from a pretty young age, I was pretty confident that that's the area that I wanted to go into. But I didn't think of doing books for children until I had almost graduated from college. I always thought I was going to do things for adults, you know, maybe write a novel or do paintings that would hang in galleries or different projects. When I was in college, I was also pretty interested in graphic novels. And so for my thesis project, I had to come up with a year-long project, and I decided to make it about this this friend of mine, an undocumented worker I had met, who was from Mexico, but he was Mixtec, or he is Mixtec, which is an indigenous group from the South, and there's a large Mixtec community in New York. And so I just thought that this was really interesting and wanted to make a project about it. And that's when I started looking at Mixtec artwork, which is a big influence for how I do my illustrations in a very sort of in a pre-Columbian-like style. So that's a little bit of – and so I was doing that project, and a professor of mine really liked what I was doing. She really liked my drawings, my illustrations. And she had illustrated some children's books and was friends with this editor, and she thought he may like my work. And she introduced me to him, and he liked my work, and I told him I like writing also. And that's sort of how that first opportunity to do a children's book appeared. And now I'm extremely happy that I made children's books, because I'm able to talk about things that I find interesting, that I find important, and share it with a great audience, and so it's very rewarding.
Oh, I'm so grateful to hear that both the storytelling and then also getting in front of children to share is something that is rewarding for you. I know that when we write, when we illustrate, you're often focused, you're focused on the reader, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have a background in public speaking or speaking in front of very large groups of 7 to 10 year olds. But that's something that I can hear that is something you enjoy doing. How is that for you, getting out in front of children and getting to share your culture and getting to share this history and just getting to meet these children that you ended up writing for?
Well, it's very rewarding. I enjoy it. I visit schools and libraries and, you know, different book festivals and whatnot. And it's very rewarding. It's, you know, I think that kids are extremely intelligent, and I try and make books about things that I find important, but hopefully do it in a way that is interesting and appropriate for them. And the response I've received from my work has been very, very positive. And I think there's a great need for the kind of books I make. You know, there's so many, Latino children in the U.S., and yet there's such a small amount of books that are about kids like them. And so I think when they see my work, they get excited and they identify with it, and it just makes them feel proud. So it's very rewarding to do something that I enjoy, that I find interesting, and then to see that it has a positive effect on children, and that they enjoy it too.
Yes, that statement. It's so awesome to hear you say that, because I feel like that right there, as people listen, is why people are driven to make books for children, because of knowing how important it is and how much they will love and cherish and value that. And Duncan, you're putting beautiful works of art into their hands. I am always marveling at beautiful picture books that bring an art gallery into the hands of a child, into bedtime, into that close, intimate time with a story where they get to study your art up close. And it was making me think as well, you mentioned the Mixtec artwork, the pre-Columbian art style that you were influenced by, and how being influenced by that, you are also influencing these legions of future artists and future illustrators and future storytellers as they see your art and they draw it themselves and they recreate it and they try to follow your line. So that is something that I just think is such a powerful thing that you have as an illustrator, and that you accomplish so well in your books. You have such a strong voice as an illustrator. I think that your art is iconic. I think it's very identifiable, and I think it reads really strongly. And then in Danza, we have all of these really beautiful, you're showing the shape, these beautiful silhouettes of the human body dancing, and your art style just lends itself so well to these symmetrical choreography, the symmetrical choreography of the dancers that you've positioned on these pages. I just think over and over as I read it, I think of the influence you're having on children, on artists, and how I quite frankly can't wait to bring your books in front of children and also look with them at some of these influences that you have and be able to talk about that connection.
Yeah, thank you. It's very rewarding, and sometimes kids will do, you know, show me drawings or whatnot that I've done in that kind of pre-Columbian like style. I didn't always draw like that, and I'd be lying if I said that that was like the artwork that first got me interested in making art. Mm. Like as a kid, I enjoyed like comic books, and I had a Spider-Man and X-Men comic books, and then I would make up my own superheroes and try and make, drawings of them, make my own little books. I was also interested in like manga and anime, the Japanese cartoons with the really big eyes.
Yeah.
And then later on, I got interested in other types of artists, and Van Gogh and Egon Schiele and different people. But after I came to the U.S. and after I had lived away from Mexico for several years, for many years, I just kind of began to miss some of the things that were just around me and that I more or less that I took for granted, so to speak. And I just kind of began to appreciate them and see them in a different light and be more curious and interested in them. And so when I looked up that mixtec artwork years later, when I was in college, like I had seen those kinds of images as a kid, just on the covers of textbooks or just in different places. But I had never really thought much about it. But when I saw them years later, after being away from Mexico for many years, I just really wanted to make a story drawn in that way. It wasn't something that I always did, but then now that I'm doing it, I'm glad that I'm sort of exposing kids to it, and hopefully they'll be curious about it, and hopefully they'll find it interesting and think of different, just open their world to different kinds of art and to different history. So it's rewarding.
All of that you say that, and it makes me think as I look at your art. As I talk about art with children, picture book art with children, we talk about how every choice is intentional. The way you texture your art, the medium you choose to work in, the way you design your characters, it's all intentional. It's all the artist trying to tell us something. And so to leave those questions with your readers and to have this rich answer to come back to is a real gift, Duncan. So thank you for providing that. For your readers, I would love to know more about the art in Danza. As I said, I loved these beautiful symmetry and silhouettes you have going on. How did you make the art for this? It looks a lot like there's mixed medium going on, a lot of sort of samples of like collage work. I assume digital collage work on a lot of this?
Yeah, and that's the technique I've been using for my books. When I worked on that project about my mixtec friend, it was also when I started experimenting with that technique. But yeah, I draw by hand on pieces of paper, and then I scan my drawings, and then in Photoshop I collage different textures of things that I've either scanned or photographed or found on the internet. So hopefully it's a combination of something that looks kind of ancient or old and different, but also kind of new and modern. With Danza in particular, it was a lot of fun to draw that book because I had to look at a lot of dance. I saw the ballet perform again. I definitely had my wife pose a couple times to try and figure out certain moves and positions. But my editor, when I was working on the book, he was a little worried that because my art is very flat, very, very symmetrical, very stylized, that it wouldn't lend itself to dance, because dance, there's so much movement and it's so fluid. But he was very happy, and I'm very happy with how it turned out, that even though the illustrations are very flat, they still hopefully capture a lot of movement. I had a lot of fun with the illustrations in the book, for sure.
You capture so many moves that are just because of illustration, because of the way you're positioning these characters. They're just frozen in time, but are so beautiful to look at. That, I mean, so many times we see the women lifting the edges of their skirts up to flare them out and throwing their heads back, and I can feel that. I can feel readers as well recreating that movement as they read. You know, so often I notice as a librarian, as I read to children, that when I'm reading out to a class of children, I can watch some of them on their bodies sort of mimicking what the characters are doing, that way of they're reading pictures. And so that's what we do when we read pictures. We mimic, we do that move ourselves, and by doing that move ourselves, it helps us to understand. But you've got, as said, in your style, you've got these toes pointed and hands positioned in certain ways and heads thrown back, and it does provide a lot of feeling. I especially love as you go into, you talk about the company's repertoire. I mean, it's company's repertoire. On page 16, you start about including the ballets based on indigenous danzas, and you go through all of these different influences that she had. And I felt particularly there in those successions of spreads where we see the influences, even before that, where we see the family outside, the group of people outside with the red bandanas, and then we flip the page and we're on stage with the dancers. There's so much right there, so densely packed, that you are showing position after position that feels like great movement, so much so that I immediately shared this book over Instagram, I think it was, when I got it, and said, I need to look up video of this and show it to my children right now. So for all that you studied, your wife studied these dances, I think you accomplished something really beautiful with this book.
Thank you. That's very kind. And I mean, you know, the book is like an informational book, and you know, hopefully, like, I would, you know, I was also just trying to get a couple of points across with the book, that, you know, just trying to talk about how her knowledge of ballet and modern dance then helped her take these traditional dances that were not meant to be performed in a theater, that were done, you know, danced for ceremonial purposes or maybe just for social purposes to have fun. But then she took those skills and was able to present them, display them in a theater. And, you know, she choreographed so many dances, and there's so many of them that are so iconic that I was, when making the book, when writing the book, I was trying to think of a way to, like, what dances do I choose, you know? And so that's how I thought of breaking it up in those spreads, you know, what were the influences, how I could more or less categorize the different types of dances that she did to kind of give a sample of her work in the book, in the picture book.
Well, you did a beautiful job. I kept flipping through going, what excerpt could I read to share, to capture what you shared? But I think so much along with this text comes watching the dances that appear on stage. So I can't wait for readers of all ages to pick up this book and really be in the story the way that I felt like I was there in the audience watching this story be performed. Duncan, you did a gorgeous job. And is there anything you wanted to share about the book that we didn't talk about that you wanted to share with readers? Other than me,
no,
I'll go in circles and circles gushing over how much I love your art and how I love this story of a woman who ended up traveling the world with folk dances that were meant to just be performed, you know, never on a stage like this, never in a company, but yet she does it, and we understand this is the way her iteration is the way it was meant to be shared. But anything else that you found that you wanted to share that I forgot to ask?
No, I mean, you know, I like one thing I liked about Amalia's story and that I tried to include in the book is that, you know, like when she was little, everyone thought that she was going to be a school teacher, you know, and because her mom was a school teacher, her grandmother had been a school teacher, and but she didn't want that. She wanted to be a dancer, and you know, at first her father didn't want it, and eventually her mom was supportive, and then later on in her teenage years, I don't really get into it in the book, but she also had to rebel a little, and you know, her parents didn't take her seriously for a while, you know, until it really kind of started taking off. But I just think it's just a nice sort of circle that in the end she did become a teacher of sorts, you know, or she did become a teacher because she opened this school where people could learn folkloric dance and ballet also, and many people that studied at her academy eventually became professional dancers in her company. So I just think there's something really nice about a really nice full circle to her story and to her life.
I agree. So it makes me think even of your children, of your wife being a dancer and hearing that dancing has been in the family, and that which inevitably means that your daughter or your son will just end up doing something completely different. I love that. But I wanted to, before we go, ask you what else you're working on. And is there ever a chance that you'll make a graphic novel? Because that would be amazing.
So the book I'm working on right now is going to be very different. It's actually that project that I started working on in college. I never quite finished it. And so all these years later, I'm kind of revisiting it. It's about a group of undocumented workers, but that were able to organize at this restaurant and just improve the working conditions at their job. And I just thought it was it's an important story and one that I've been wanting to tell for a while, but it's a story that's more for older readers and for adults. It'll be kid-friendly, but it's not the main audience. But the book, one thing that's very, that I'm excited about it and that was important for me is that it's going to fold out like an accordion.
Oh, cool.
Because the mixtec codecs, that's the way they would fold. So I'm working on that now, and it should come out sometime next fall of 2018. I'm excited to be working on it. It's been a little daunting just because it's a project that I first started so long ago, so to revisit it, it's been tricky, but so that's what's next, and then I have other projects, other picture books that I'm starting to, different manuscripts that I'm working on, but that'll be the next project after Lanza.
Cool. Well, congratulations. It's good to stay busy, and it sounds like you've got some really cool things going on. Duncan, before I let you go, let me say one more time, thank you for putting time aside tonight to talk. Thank you for making Danza, for sharing, for connecting with our readers. I look forward to this and many more books to come, and all the ways that your influence and your love and your passion will continue to connect with readers.
Thank you. No, I've really enjoyed it, and you're very kind, so I really appreciate it.
Well, before I let you go, I'm going to give you the last sentiment and leave you with our readers. So I'll say this way, as our parting words. Duncan, I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Just to read. Reading is wonderful. You know, I'm a writer now because I really enjoyed reading. And reading just opens up so many worlds. It helps us learn about ourselves many times, and but also helps us learn about other people that are different than ourselves. And library is my favorite place, probably one of my favorite places, if not. And so I just say to enjoy your time at the library and read as many books as you can.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. And Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Sherry Miller shares Princess Hair, her author-illustrator debut. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.